We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, Episode 3. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Thank you so much to everyone who's tuned in to the episode so far. We're at well over 100 plays on SoundCloud, well over 100 views on YouTube in just 3 short weeks. So definitely thank you all so much for the support, the calls, texts, everything is very much appreciated, and all the suggestions really goes a long way. So before we get into it, I was thinking about something interesting that happened last week. I'm in several real estate groups on Facebook, and in one of my groups, a guy commented on a post saying that he doesn't like the Dayton market. His main reason was because of the lack of appreciation on the homes, and also that he didn't like that cash flow was the only benefit he could see there. And in my mind, I almost started laughing because I'm thinking, isn't cash flow what you want? Isn't that the goal? Isn't that what's going to make you free? And also, appreciation can easily be seen as speculation. I mean, home values go up and down over time. It's hard to predict what's going to happen as far as home values in most of the United States. And so another guy from the group told him about 2 properties he personally got for under 50K. One that rents for 900, one that rents for 1000, both in Dayton. And he listed reasons why he believed it was a good market. So the moral of the story is you can't listen to people's opinions about markets. You just have to do your own research, look at the facts, look at your goals, and just make your own decision. And it's also a quick update on my property in Dayton. It's being advertised for rent. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom house. It's being advertised for rent for $900 per month. And it's about 5 minutes from downtown, which is pretty cool. Crazy that in the Midwest, people are paying that little money for a whole house. But that's besides the point. Anyway, I'm excited about this episode with Khalil and Cassandra from Glad Properties. We're going to learn a whole lot. Definitely a power couple, and we'll dive deep into the Burr strategy, which is something a lot of people have expressed interest in. Also want to shout out our show sponsors, MAINT Inc. MAINT stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. MAINT empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. They just did an awesome rebrand of their website, which is mintinc.usa.com. You can also follow them on Instagram at mint_inc. You can become a member of their network for free and network with other minority entrepreneurs and professionals. So if you fit into one of those two categories, it's definitely something that you want to take advantage of. Next, there's an awesome event happening November 4th through 6th. It's an online real estate summit. It's called Real Estate Summit 2, Creative Strategies Edition. You'll learn about things like property preservation, short-term rentals, seller financing, mobile investing, and investing out of state. The summit has been organized by Kendra Barnes, who you can find on Instagram at The Key Resource. She'll be a guest on an upcoming show. Gabrielle Martin will also be sharing on this summit. She'll be talking about investing out of state, and she'll also be a guest on an upcoming show. You can use code PRESALE, all caps, for 50% off. You can find the link in our link tree or in the show notes below.
Also want to make a plug for two resources we have on our link tree. One is called the Rental Property 90-Day Action Plan by Kendra Barnes, who I mentioned above. I purchased the guide. It's an excellent resource. Essentially, it walks you through all the steps, exactly what you need to do on your path to purchasing a property, whether that's an investment, whether that's your primary residence. It can be applicable to anyone. You can get it for $10 using the code TAKEACTION. And again, you can follow Kendra at The Key Resource. The second resource is Hey New Landlord by Gabrielle Martin, who I mentioned will be an upcoming guest on a show. She'll talk about house hacking in this book. Essentially, house hacking is living in one unit and renting out the others. So she'll talk through what she did well, what she could improve, and essentially it's a foolproof guide for anyone who's interested in that opportunity. And you can find her on Instagram at @investandchill. Anyway, very excited for this show. Thank you all for tuning in. Let's get into it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Very excited for this interview we have today. With us, we have Khalil and Cassandra Glaude from Glaude Properties, representing for New Jersey, Southern New Jersey, not too far from Philly. This couple is really doing some great work in real estate. So excited to get into it and learn more about everything that they've been doing. So first, we just love to hear from each of you what your childhood was like, where you grew up, and what you saw or what you didn't see that shaped your perception of building wealth.
Okay, so I guess I'll go first. So just a little bit about myself. I'm a first generation American here in the country. Both my parents are from the Caribbean. So from the beginning, you know, the house that I grew up in was purchased. I've never lived in any other type of house. I've never lived in an apartment. So my experience is a little different from Khalil's. My parents came here in the 80s. They did live in an apartment, you know, for the first couple years that they were here. But by the time that they had me, they were able to purchase their home. And just a little bit about growing up, my parents or my mom, she never really talked to me much about rental properties or rental income. It was always like, you know, get your dream home. That was the goal, like, you know, get your dream property. And that's kind of what I grew up on. Not until I met Khalil, it never became a reality that we could, you know, have multiple rentals and get income from rentals.
Definitely.
All right, so my experience is probably like completely different. I grew up in, first off, both of my parents were in the military growing up. Okay. So I grew up with two brothers, three boys. And we moved from the time I was born till I was 18, probably like 16 times. We never was in a stable household. Like, we weren't poor or nothing like that. We had what we needed to get by or whatever, but we moved so much. It was hard growing up with friends, and I never got a chance to see like what it was like own a house. And I never even thought about wealth creation or real estate or anything like that until I was like in my lower 20s, when I was like forced to try to step out into this world by myself. And so I grew up on hard work, and hard work will get you everything. And like a lot of Black people do, it's okay to be rich with love. You don't need money, like the, what they try to tell us. And so that was like my whole background growing up. We moved around a whole lot. I was born in Guam. We moved to New Jersey, from New Jersey to Virginia. Then from Virginia, we moved to Florida. Then from Florida back to New Jersey, then back to Florida. And so it was a whole bunch of scattering around. So yeah. It feels good now that we're getting kind of settled in, probably like in New Jersey right now. And I don't want to have my children go through the same thing I went through as far as moving around. It's kind of hard being unstable.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. And Cassandra, just out of curiosity, where are your parents from?
Oh, they're both born and raised from Haiti.
Oh, me too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Small world.
Sac passe. Definitely. That's awesome. I grew up in Brooklyn. I've been out here about 3 years. My parents, they're both from
Oh. Yeah, cool. So that's where my parents first came. When they came to America, they came to Brooklyn, and then by way of Brooklyn, they moved to New Jersey. So my parents grew up extremely poor, poor as, you know, you could imagine. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, kind of always instilled in me, like, getting a house is possible. You just have to work hard. Just similar to close parents.
Yeah.
Just work hard. We're, on the other hand, trying to teach our children the opposite. Work smarter, not harder. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's our experience for right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what are your career backgrounds?
So I'll go first. So we both met in college. We both went to Rutgers University in New Jersey. So right now I'm working in health insurance. I just currently had my baby. He's only 4 months. So I'm currently on maternity leave. But Khalil played football in college, and he had he actually played in the NFL for 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. So that's kind of, you know, I don't know. I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but that's kind of what prompted us to get into real estate.
Right.
You know, the NFL stands for not for long. So so we, you know, from that career, from the NFL career, we kind of jumped into where we are now, which is in real estate.
Definitely. Definitely. And Khalil, I guess you can tell us more about your background and we can segue into what got you into real estate.
All right. So like she said, straight out of college, we graduated college in 2013. So from 2013, I got a chance to go to play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I was there for 2 years. And after being there for 2 years, I didn't get signed back. And so I went and I had like a workout with the Dallas Cowboys. And I was fortunate enough to make the team and go into camp and going to the last game of the preseason. I suffered like a career-ending injury. Yeah, I didn't know it was career-ending at the time, but still like suffering from the effects of that still today. And wow. So that's why real estate was something I feel like we had to do for my family, just for all of the great perks that we'll get into throughout this throughout the podcast. But it's the perfect fit for us right now.
Definitely. So what was it like? Like what was there like one thing that kind of sparked your interest? Like did you see something where you said, you know what, like real estate, this is the route we're going to go. This is kind of one of the routes we're going to use, or the route we're going to use to build wealth.
So like growing up, when you hear about being rich and or not being rich, but trying to be wealthy and build wealth and stuff like that, you think about like the stock market and everything. And even like playing football for the amount of time I had, we had a lot of financial advisors that was thrown at us every single day saying, do this or do that. And most everything they were doing was talking about investing inside stocks. And so at that time, I never was that comfortable with it because I never could put my hands on it to see like exactly how it would work. I just would think it would be like going fishing, just throwing your rod out there and hopefully you catch something.
Yeah.
And really no control about what's going to happen at the time. And so when I was on IR in the 2015 season, I think inside Dallas, I was sitting and I called my wife and I was like, hey, we gotta try to find a way to make the money that I have right now. We gotta find a way to make it stretch and make it work for us. And so I started doing research. She started doing research. We started reading and we started looking up like all the wealthy people in the United States or the wealthy people across the world. And the one thing they all had in common was real estate.
Right.
And so we didn't understand what about real estate. Was they owning certain businesses and they owned the real estate? So technically that's real estate as well too. Or were they just, landlords, or did they invest inside of like REITs, what are like companies that's basically like a stock market that trade the same way? And so we didn't understand exactly what it was to do. So when I came home from there, I read something inside a book and it was like, find the richest person inside your family and go sit down and talk to them and figure out what it is they do. And so not to say I have rich people in my family, but I have people in my family I feel like have some money. You feel me?
Yeah.
At least that's pretty comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I went and I talked to one of my uncles. I'm like, hey, what's up, Unc? He's a retired police officer. I'm like, I got a couple of dollars. I'm trying to figure out what to do with it. And from there, he went on to tell me at that time he owned probably like 5 properties or something around the way. And so I started talking to him. I want to do this. And from there, he was like, you know what? I don't know how much I could teach you, but I have a good friend of mine who's also doing it. And this guy at the time probably had close to 100 units or so.
Wow.
And so he was able to put me under his wing and kind of fast track this at that point, like at the beginning of 2016, to purchase our first couple of properties and everything. So that was what went from reading to figure out how to stretch, how to keep your money creating wealth, how to generate wealth from the money that we had, and just the curiosity and talking to family members and just reaching to my circle that I already had created was able to just to catapult us into real estate.
Definitely. And tell us about what the first deal was like.
So you want to start?
Yeah. So our first deal was in 2016. It was about a year after Khalil, you know, first got injured. He still suffers to this day from concussions. Wow. But yeah, it's serious.
That's tough.
So our first deal was in South Jersey. It was a one bedroom, one bathroom loft. So, you know, essentially it was about two bedrooms because you can, you know, use the loft space to create a bedroom. That was our first deal. We had no idea what we were doing. The house was built in the 70s, so it was pretty old, but we were able to, you know, renovate it. And like Khalil mentioned, that guy that, you know, Khalil was able to network through, he helped us kind of with that first property. So he helped us find the contractors. He helped us close the deal. He helped us find a real estate agent, so on and so forth. And just to talk about a little bit of numbers, that first property that we brought was about $25,000. And we put anywhere from $10,000 to $12,000 in it for renovations. And then we were able to rent it for that first year for about $850.
Wow.
And that's a little bit of background. That was our first property ever. We've grown a lot since then. That first one was, it was rural. Like we had no idea what we were doing. We weren't really able to like be as hands-on with the finances because, you know, the guy that Khalil networked through, he did all the work. Like he brought all the materials and, you know, Khalil was there, but it was more or less so him helping us along the way. It wasn't until we got into our second project, we were really able to, you know, figure out all the calculations, how much it's going to cost, how long it's going to take, find the right tenant, like doing so much research. So.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And what I like about that story is you took action. You didn't really necessarily know everything you were doing, but you had someone to guide you along the way. And, you know, you put the money up and you reap the reward of it. Something that a lot of people get stuck on is just analysis paralysis, you know, like should I do this, should I do that? You just have to do something, you know. Even if you fall on your face, like it's just some money. You make it back, you know, you can save up and try it again. So I like the fact that you all took action. And what do you still
That's what my uncle, I was reading so much stuff, and we were reading so much stuff, and every time I call my uncle and tell him like, Have you heard about this? What about this? I was like, I'm gonna just wait. And he said, what? He said, you know way more than I ever knew. He said, you don't just stop reading, put the book down, and go buy a property. And that's what we're really prompted us to go ahead and spend that money to get into our first property. And we're happy we did.
Right.
Definitely. And what remind me, what part of Jersey was that first property in?
It was in Camden County. It's like a bunch of different towns that make up Camden County, like Cherry Hill, Clementon, Pine Hill, Sicklerville. Sicklerville is like the area that I'm from, and that's where like most of our properties are. And Sicklerville is a small town outside of, probably like 20, 25 minutes outside of Philadelphia.
Got it. Okay. Do people like commute in to Philly from there, in that area?
Yeah, we actually have like a lot of like a couple of nurses and stuff like that rent from us, and a couple of people that work like actually inside Philadelphia that rent from us. Because it's easy, just right up the highway, and you can get there very quick, like probably like no more than 15 miles away.
Nice. So what have y'all been up to since that first deal? Like as far as like other acquisitions and such?
2016, so right after that property went, we kind of got it stabilized and everything like that. Then we went on to, in 2016, we might have brought two more properties inside of that time. Then the following year, we added on a couple more, then added a couple more a year after that. And so now we're at 14 total properties today.
Wow.
So
in 3 years.
In 3 years. We're steady trying to grow. And I kind of think like, so a story and a lesson too. Mm-hmm. So the guy that gave me the crash course in real estate, I was kind of uncomfortable because he was moving so fast and it was a lot of stuff I didn't know. And so I felt like as soon as I felt like a chance that we got to know everything that we did know, I kind of at a time branched away from him. And I think I did it too early. I tried to become the teacher before I finished like being a student and learning the game. So we could take it back if we would have sat down and just took him for who he was and understood what he was doing. And he's a very good guy. He did no shady business. But you know, you're from New York. People talk fast. Whoa. You're not sure what's going to happen. And so, and now just recently, we just reconnected back with the guy. So we're getting ready to ramp this thing up and really just go full throttle. And hopefully my wife doesn't have to go back to work. She can just live off the real estate.
Right.
Absolutely. That's the goal, right?
Yeah, that's the goal.
So for the, we don't have to go through each one, but are the properties you've gotten since then, like, are they like single family, like duplexes? What are those?
Yeah, so we have two duplexes and we have, and the rest are single family.
Okay.
And I guess the goal would be to, our goal is 100 units. Like, that's what we want to get, whether if it's going to be through apartment acquisitions, but we had to take 100 single family houses or 100 duplexes or whatever it's going to take. That's what our goal is. And of course, once we get there, we get 100, and why can't we get 1,000? And right. So, but our first short-term goal will be 100 units. And we set the goal there because we feel like it's very doable.
Absolutely.
But so all the deals pretty much look the same. And I guess we're going to get into it eventually, but to talk about how we purchase the deals and how we're able to purchase the deals in, I guess, that short period of time, which is 3 years. It seems like it's long, but it's a short period of time to try to get 14 units together. And so after the first property, we bought, I guess a quick story. So
yeah,
I was talking with one of my friends, and I was telling him, I said, I want to get into this, to real estate. This is after I already did a lot of, before I started the research or whatever, before she started the research. And I said, how could we do it? We've seen this property. It was like probably like $35,000. We estimated it probably cost like another 20 to fix it. And so I said, all right, so how about I buy the property, I fix it up, then I'm going to give you money to buy the property back from me, and then we're going to just rent the property out together. And so at that time, we didn't understand nothing. I talked to her. She's like, what? What is that? I'm like, I don't know. I said, maybe that's how we can do it. And so once we first bought our property, we realized that we can do that process ourselves through the bank, and it's completely legal. So that was probably would have been mortgage fraud or something like that, right? So now after we bought our first property, what we've been doing this entire time, we'll buy our properties inside cash. And after we renovate the property, get it stabilized, we take it straight to a bank and we cash out, refinance, pull all of the money that we put out, our initial investment, we move on to buy the next property. So the whole time as we're building our portfolio, we're like, in essence, just recycling our money.
Right, right.
So that's how we're able to move.
Absolutely. And that's something that I've been reading about, but it's not, like, there's something, I think there's still some holes in my understanding, and perhaps for others as well. So could you give an example? So let's say you can give an example, just give like pretend numbers, just okay, so you can understand. An
example with numbers so we can try to understand.
Yeah.
And so I guess the whole process would be like, so say if we see a property, right? Mm-hmm. And we say the properties, when we buy the property, when you do it this way, you always want to start from the back end. So you want to start with how much the property is worth, right? So we say, okay, the property is worth $100,000, right? And so we know that we'll go to a bank, and usually when you do a cash out refinance and you're pulling cash out, most banks, almost all of them, are only going to give you 75% of what the property is worth, right? So we're saying that, so now I know that the max I'm going to be able to pull out from that property is $75,000, right? Even though it's worth $100,000, and that's where our equity will come from. And so then we'll go back even further than that. I'll say, okay, look, Cass, we're going to get $75,000 back for this property. It's worth $100,000. And then she'll say, okay, well, how much can we buy the property for? And to determine how much we could buy the property for will be how much the renovation will cost. And just to make the numbers like easy for us both to understand, so I don't get stumbled. Now we say that it's good. The property is going to take $25,000 worth of work, right? So then, since I know that, then I'll say, okay, so our offer price that we could put an offer on the property is for $50,000, right? So we'll get a property, say we got under contract for $50,000. We spend that $25,000 to renovate the property. After we renovate it, we get a tenant inside of it. Then we go to the bank and we say, look, we'll have comps with us to show that the house is worth $100,000. We'll say, we want to cash out, refinance this property. And the bank will say, okay, well, I can only give you 75% loan to value of the property. Instead of, well, we know in our head, like, oh, for real, that's it? Like, but we know that's the number that we're striking for anyway. And so then they'll come, they'll send an appraiser out. The appraiser will say, okay, it's worth $100,000. And we'll go to closing, and we'll get close to $75,000 back inside of our pockets.
Wow.
And the thing that's good about it, say if the property appraises for $120,000. So now we might get $85,000 back in our pockets. And now we actually made money. So we technically flipped the house to ourselves. And when you cash out refinance, unlike flipping the property, like you have something called capital gains. And capital gains, once you sell an asset, you have to pay a whole boatload of taxes on the profit that you make. But mm-hmm. when you refinance a property and it stays inside your name, any cash that you bring back is not taxable. Wow. So you can do whatever it is you want to do with that money. And that's like a long story of how to of that whole process.
Wow. And just to add a little bit with that $75,000 that he was referring to that he would be able to get back from the bank, you could use that $75,000 now to go purchase another home.
Yeah, right. Recycle it. Keep moving.
Yeah, keep using the same money over and over to acquire more properties.
That's incredible. That's incredible. What's that process like? So, well, I guess timeline. So let's say, you know, you got all the renovations done and you go get it appraised, all that good stuff. What's the timeline to like get your money, but to get the money back out?
So certain banks, right, they'll say the property has to be seasoned. And so a seasoned property just technically means they want it like either sustained with a tenant and stuff like that for at least a year, maybe 2 years, maybe 6 months. So it just depends on the relationship with the bank. And it's going to be different everywhere, but you're going to find somebody that's going to be able to do what you need to get done. So for this particular bank that we've been using, we can, as soon as it's ready, we can go to them and tell them we want our money. And depending on how long it takes from the order to appraisal to order the title on the property, and that's when it takes, you have to have some good connections and make relationships with the title company, and then also good connections with your bank. And the whole process, if it's moving fast, it can get done within 30 days.
Wow.
30 days after the property is fixed up.
That's awesome. And do you use like a local community bank or like a Bank of America?
Yes. So that's it. You have to use a local community bank. I'm not saying, well, from everything I've read, from talking to a whole bunch of different banks, you're going to need a local community bank that manages their own loans and everything, because their underwriting is going to go directly through them. It's not going to have to go to Ohio somewhere or through their loan department. And once you get inside like that realm, stuff can take a little while, and like the approval rating is going to go down as well.
Definitely. Yeah. And so something that I've noticed is that a lot of people who are doing great things in real estate, Black people in particular, are married. So could you two talk more about the importance of marriage and how it's helped you two to really aggressively work towards your goals and reach where you have in just a couple short years?
Yeah. I think we both share, like we both want the same things for our family. So that makes it a little easier. We both have the same goals, the same end goals. So I never even thought about that. You're right. A lot of people that are in real estate, particularly Black couples, they are married. We just have the same vision. We want the same things for our family. We want the same thing for our last name. We want more for our children. We want more to represent, you know, the Black community, you know, that we're able to do these things. So I think as long as we were both on the same page, it's not like he wants to do this, I want to do that. I think that's what keeps us strong as a couple and what keeps us going forward.
And I guess for me to answer that question, I'll say, like, when you look at everything that you do, right, like most of the things you do inside life, you need somebody. And whether it's your partner you're in a relationship with or a partner that you find off the street. And inside real estate, I think it's the same thing. Most people that are growing, it's impossible for them to really grow by yourself, like in anything. And so I feel like we're able to do the things we've done so far because in the things that I'm weak in, I feel like she's strong in. Like personally, I'm a personal person where I come talk to you, but my heart is big. So as far as business goes, I understand numbers. I understand how to find a deal. But dealing with people, she's way more shrewd than me. So she's going to make sure you pay the rent. She's going to make sure the right tenant is inside of there. She's not giving anybody a break. And the break that we're giving them is providing them with the best possible rental property that we can provide for the area. And we pride ourselves in making sure it's one of the nicest ones out. But however, she's there to hold you accountable. Then as far as spending, I feel like I'm pretty good with money, but I feel like she's a little more organized than me. So I feel like there's like a yin to our yang.
Yeah.
And I feel like the further I grow, the further she grows. And I feel like we work good together, like in that way. She could put me in check. And I can don't put her in check, but we both can hold each other accountable. I think that's what I think is the thing about holding each other accountable And that's probably why you see them, the answers you'll probably get from those people. It's I'm sure it's going to come with something with accountability.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely. So let's say, are there roles that each of you play as you go through different deals, or is it kind of on a case by case basis?
Well, everything. She's looking to, if she finds a deal, she'll run it by me. Mm-hmm. I'll run the numbers on the deal. After we run the numbers on the deal, we could put either one of us could submit the offer like through the company, whether she deals with the real estate agent or I do. But when it comes to managing she does all the managerial things. So if I come and I do a budget for the property, as far as renovations go, she'll manage the project. She'll make sure everything is getting done. Then when it comes time to get a tenant, she'll also manage the project. So she's doing, I would say, more of the hands-on hard work, not physical labor, but making sure everything is ran right. And I'm in the background just helping her with the numbers to just say, yes, this is a deal. This is how we can get it done. But she'll help draw the deadline for how fast work should be done, help write the checks to the contractors and make sure everything is being handled the right way.
Yeah, sounds like a dream team.
Yeah, right.
You know, as far as being we don't have an outside source for our property manager. So that's my second job. I'm, you know, work full-time mother and full-time property manager. So I kind of manage all the properties as far as finding the tenant, putting them in. Once they're in, you know, if they need some maintenance work or whatever issue they're having, paying rent, you know, they kind of go through me. Like Khalil said, he's shy. He's an introvert. He doesn't like to talk to people. So everything kind of gets filtered through me. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I report back to him kind of thing. So we basically work together, you know, as a team.
Definitely. I want to talk more about the property management. So there seems to be two camps. There's one who manages their own properties, others who outsource it. And I think there's a perception of what it's like to self-manage, and I think there's a reality of it, it seems. So I'd just love to hear more about why you chose to self-manage the properties and what it's actually like. And if it's really the big time-consuming thing people keep saying it is.
Okay, so the reason why we're self-managing right now is because where we're located is where most of our properties are.
Yeah.
And so we feel like at this particular time, it's something that we can handle because there's not that many units. And after you have a system down and you have the right software and stuff like that, the headaches and stress, you kind of alleviate yourself from that. If somebody has a maintenance request or something, they'll send it. What's the website?
Cozy Co.
Something called Cozy Co, where people pay their rent on there. They get reminders of rent is late. We can
maintenance requests.
All the communication can be done through the software, and we try to lay that out there to our tenants or whatever. But the reason why we're doing it ourselves right now is just the simple fact of us just having the time to do so.
And to cut costs.
Yeah, and to cut costs. But, you know, right now, the time is worth the money as far as that. But once we say we get 50 units or so, we're not going to – why we want to manage all of our properties? That could take away from us trying to find more deals, trying to find more financing, trying to manage our contractors on the job. It's just about, I think, where you're at particularly inside your real estate career. And also, we're planning to have somebody else manage it every – before we do a deal, that's one of our expenses. So one of our expenses is actually property management that we're saving for, just so when the time comes, we're not going to get hit, and we know we can afford it because we already budgeted for it.
Right.
Definitely.
And as far as that's not, it's not the perception of being a landlord is, oh, I got to go unclog a toilet, or I have to go do this or do that. I think if you have one property, right, your experience is going to be different versus if you have 10.
Yeah.
Because by 10, you might have a group of guys that you feel like can handle those type of tasks. Like you have a plumber, you have an electrician, you have this, the stress is still, like, you get a call, you're like, oh man, something is wrong. And you just want to make sure the tenants are okay. You want to make sure that you handle the situation as fast as possible. But you're going to have problems anyway. Like, would you not want to be a landlord and manage your property and not make any money? Or would you rather have a problem that pays you? So right. I think that's the only way you can think about it.
Definitely. And speaking of expenses, what would you say is like the average cash flow for the, if you're comfortable sharing, for like all the properties?
On average, with the loan, our average cash flow is around like $300 or so.
Okay.
And then plus we have like an extra. Most of our rentals average around like $1,250 for rent, and so it's another like $100 or $110 that we're budgeting for property management that we could just do whatever we want to do with, but we just have the money that's just waiting for us there. But around $300 or so is like our cash flow number right now.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. And do you use some of the cash flow to like fund other stuff, or is it mostly just the cash out refi money that you use and just kind of keep recycling that, and everything you get from the rentals just kind of letting it build? What is your approach?
Yeah. I mean, we're trying to, everything we're doing right now is based on our real estate career. So every bit of money that we make from anything outside, we're just trying to build up our account to just go acquire more deals and just be stronger financially. So our cash flow, if we can, most of the time is being saved, unless we maybe have to use it for a little something here or a little something there. But all we're doing is just trying to put that money into our investment account, which we have like is one of our accounts with the business. And we're just putting that money inside there, just trying to build it up to be stronger financially when we go to banks, so we have money inside the account. And also just to make a move and be ready.
Definitely. And is your company LLC?
It's an LLC.
Got it. How does it work with like getting bank financing? Is it based on like the business credit? That's something that I think people are also kind of confused about. Like some people, again, it's another one camp is like, oh, I'm putting everything in my name. And the other is, no, I'm putting everything to an LLC. And I think the hang up people get is the question of financing and how that works, getting a mortgage and all that stuff under LLC. I don't think it's as straightforward for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. So when you have an LLC and you're trying to obtain financing, like your rates or in the structure of your loan are going to be a little bit different. At least where we're at, I don't know a bank that's really given an LLC like a 30-year fixed mortgage. Like the best terms you can get is maybe 25 years or a 20-year note or something like that, with the interest rates being a little bit higher than obtaining a mortgage inside of your name or whatever. But the reason why we elected to do everything through an LLC is not only for like liability issues, but just for the simple fact that we don't want a property to show up on our personal credit.
Right.
We don't want it to affect our DTI and kind of hold us down. So basically all of the debt that we are getting in both of our, like for our family, is being underneath the business. So it's not going to hold us down as far as we want to go purchase a house inside of our name. We'll get the best rate. So our credit will always be good and not be affected. Or we want to purchase a car or something. So
yeah, I think that's real important.
Yeah. So just for us, it works for us. But however, I don't think it's a right way or a wrong way to do it. Like you can do it inside of your, because there's way more options, I think, if you do it inside of your name, if you're just starting out versus doing it inside of LLC.
Definitely.
And just to segue into that, a year ago, is we've been purchasing everything through the business or whatever, but my wife, she actually purchased her own property, like through her personal name, or her own rental property through FHA's 203K loan. So she was able to access that and play with the game a little bit to be able to get a property underneath her belt.
All right. And our plan right now, because we're so young, we're both only 28 years old. Our plan right now, like, I feel like people want to sell you, like, you know, get your forever home now. Like, life is complete when you have children, you're married, and you have a house. I feel like that was our parents' dreams. We don't mind. Like, right now, what our plan is to, you know, our plan moving forward is to live in a home, renovate it, and then, you know, when we leave, rent it out, and then continue until we get to that point where, you know, we both don't have to work anymore and our rental properties, you know, do, you know, help us gain financial freedom. I know my friends are always asking me all the time, like, you still work? Like, don't your rental properties cover your income? And, you know, they would, but we would like to be more comfortable. There's nothing wrong with being more comfortable. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
That's why we're both like, you know, we want to keep going strong until we really feel like, you know, we could let our hair down and really relax and feel like, you know, our kids' futures are taken care of. You know, we can vacation when we want to, things like that. So.
Yeah. Definitely. And can you, it's funny, I actually saw a post on Instagram about the 203K loan. So can you, the FHA 203K, not too familiar with it. Can you talk more about how that works?
So a 203k loan is basically a renovation loan. So to make the long story short, it's basically when you find a property and the bank gives you the loan for the cost of the house and also the cost it's going to take to renovate the home. So when I brought my first property, I used a 203k loan. And so basically when I applied for the loan, the bank gave me the cost for the house and the cost to renovate it. So, you know, make a long story short, that's.
Yeah, so 203k loan is under FHA. And so FHA allows people to purchase properties like in whose credit might not be that good. And so you could only have to put like 3.5% down, I think is the bare minimum. But under the FHA loan, there's also like always little under like tier programs that sometimes allow you to put $100 down or $0 down. So actually when she bought her property through FHA under the 203K construction loan, she was able just to bring, I think, $100 to closing. And she was able to get the property. And so it's not everywhere, but you have to like check with your mortgage broker or anywhere to see if there's any other special programs that will help you with your down payment and stuff like that. And so just FHA loans are good for people who are just starting off. And under FHA loan, where you just have to just put 3.5% down, you can buy anything up to a fourplex. And you could live inside one and rent the rest of the three out. And there's like caveats to it as well too, because you have to technically live inside the property that you bought in the FHA loan for at least a year.
Right.
So.
Wow. Did I hear $100?
I literally only put $100 down on a property. There's all types of programs out there for anyone looking to, you know, get into, whether it's a personal home for yourself or rental property, look up with your state to see, you know, what type of programs or options. I didn't know about the $100 down program. My real estate agent actually brought it to my attention. So I took advantage of that. And literally we put $100 down, you know, aside from closing costs and on and so forth. But, you know, aside from the typical 20%, that was able to save us a lot of money.
Wow. That is incredible. That is incredible. Yeah. I didn't know something like that existed. Wow. That's awesome.
And that's all personal name stuff. You can't get an FHA loan under a business. You have to get underneath your personal name.
Definitely. How long is that the house? That's the house you currently live in, right? Or was it a prior house?
That's the house you currently
live in. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So what was the ready to
get out and rent this bed?
Already. How much was the property?
I think it was like 35.
Crazy thing is, it was $35,000, right? I think the whole loan was for like maybe like 60 or something like that. All right, so we put it in, but now the house, daggone,
it's appraising for
like $130,000 now. Yeah. So it was able to build like a lot of equity on the somehow just the market just jumped up on us real fast. And plus it was a foreclosure. So of course the value was all the way down. And when we bought it, we made sure that we bought it as a rental property and ran the numbers as if we were going to rent it out one day.
Right.
That was the whole plan in the future anyway.
Definitely. Wow. I just hear a bunch of wins. Actually kind of gets to one of the questions I had. I was looking on the Instagram, and I know you mentioned property in foreclosure. So can you explain to us how foreclosures work and how, like, if someone wanted to buy a house that was foreclosed, is it a different process than typical? Like, what does that look like?
So how the foreclosures work, a foreclosure is when somebody defaults on their loan and the bank buys back the loan and takes over the property. It's called like a real estate owned REO. And so the whole process is still the same thing, except for most foreclosures that you buy for a chance, at least for a rental property, you're not going to be able to get like financing right up front, because most conventional loans, like if you're trying to buy it by yourself under your name or whatever, they want the property to be livable.
Right.
So in order for the house to be livable, it has to have carpet. It has to have all the plumbing must work, all the lights must work, and so on. And that's why like foreclosures are like a best friend to real estate investor, because they're distressed and they're like, you can add value to them by when you fix them up. And so foreclosures are just properties that people lost, and the whole process is the same as far as buying it, except for if the house is run down, it's going to be hard getting a loan on it. And if you can't get a loan on it initially, that's when you have to get money from a family, like private money or hard money, or some situations in order to purchase the property if you don't have the funds yourself.
And just a quick story, I actually got denied the first time I applied for a conventional loan. And I actually got denied, and I couldn't understand. But one of the reasons why is because the house was, you know, it didn't have floors. It didn't have, you know, this, it didn't have that. So one of the tips or secrets to certain type of loans that you get, they have certain requirements that you have to kind of go through. So doing the 203K loan, which is a renovation loan, it gave me the opportunity to buy this house with the thought process already knowing beforehand that we were going to have to renovate it. And then just to give, you know, one more story, getting this home and going through the whole 203K loan process kind of helped us network with other contractors, so on and so forth, because to have a 203K loan, your contractors have to be 203K approved. You can't just have any type of contractor. They have to have a special type of license. So, you know, with finding a contractor that had that 203K loan license, it helped us. It actually catapulted our business into something else. So, on top of real estate investing, you know, being a landlord, having tenants on the side, we also have a construction business, basically, where, you know, people need, you know, the floors renovated, their bathrooms renovated, their kitchen renovated. We kind of do that as well. So,
wow. Yeah. Can you talk to us a little more about that and how that kind of started up?
So when my wife was looking to purchase this property, we had to find a contractor that knew how to that was licensed and was able to do the work. And so we met with several different contractors. And at the time, we came to the house and we met with a contractor, and we were going through giving him a list of everything we wanted to get done so we could send a bid to the bank. And at the time, we had two properties that we were renovating that was inside the same area. So when we was there, we said, "Hey, would you mind coming to check out this other property with us so you could just see the type of work that we do?" And we explained to them we're real estate investors and stuff as well. And we did it just so we could make sure he wasn't trying to rob us. Because if your girl takes her car to the body shop, they're going to get hit with a $10,000 bill versus if you have a man there that kind of understands how to change a tire and stuff like that. So we just wanted to show him that you're not going to rob us, because we know what the cost of everything is. And so once we went there and then we talked to him, then he said, "Hey, I'm kind of busy for this job right now." He said, "Well, if you have subcontractors that have insurance," he said, "how about you just oversee the job underneath like my license and have your guys do the work?" And so we were like, okay. So right from that point on, and he's seen, we had guys that are insured that have their own insurance and stuff like that as well too. So we allowed them, we basically gave him the guys that we use to do the property. And from there, it turned into him calling us and saying, "Hey, are your guys busy? Can you do a kitchen?" Because the guy owns a kitchen store as well too. "Can you do a kitchen?" Then from the kitchen turned to, "Hey, I have three houses that need full renovations. You think that you can handle that?" And then it turned into us going and doing three houses owned by banks, fully renovating them to, and that was only a year and a half or so ago. And
in 2018.
Yeah, from that point, we probably did 2018. Inside that, we probably renovated at least like a good 8 or 9 full renovations on houses and worked on probably another 10. So it kind of, it jumped us into something else that we were not expecting on doing that at all.
Yeah.
And we were able to make some money outside of just the regular real estate investing. It was pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that year, we were really lucky. We were actually able to make 6 figures that year alone just on the renovation side.
Yeah.
So, I mean, networking, it works. Like, you never know who you're going to meet. And it's funny because the house that we're living in now, Khalil actually put a bid on it in 2017 under the company, but it fell through. And then fast forward to 2018, I put a bid on it and I got it. So,
yeah.
Wow.
That's
incredible. That's incredible. Another brick added to the empire.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So what would you say was the biggest fear before jumping into that first deal?
I think it was just the fact that we possibly could lose money.
Yeah, that was my biggest fear, losing money.
Yeah, and she comes from a stable household too, so her risk were a little bit like, she's more, I guess, risk adverse than me. Like, she like really thinks things through as well too, but she's all like, "No, we can't do that, at least right now," at least until she kind of like fully understands something all the way. Me, I'm willing to take a little bit more risk, but I'm still kind of cautious. But we were very nervous about losing money. We didn't want to strike out because we were thinking, like, if it goes wrong, we're never going to be able to do it again.
Right.
And so that was it. But the thing that helps you get over that fear is education, is you being prepared. Once you're prepared, you're not scared because you already went through all the outcomes that could happen. And if as long as you don't just, once you're prepared, you set your numbers, you know exactly what works for your market, then you know like what's the worst outcome going to be. So just run your numbers on the worst outcome. And anything else other than that is just going to be a bonus.
Right.
Definitely. So, what do you think is something that holds people back from just taking the leap? Because, you know, there's a lot of people who do research and go to seminars, listen to podcasts, watch webinars, scroll through people on Instagram, and they just stay on the sidelines for years and years and years and years. What do you think are some of the causes of that, especially for Black people?
So I think it's confidence, like
and money.
Like for the person who has the money, but he's confident, he's scared to lose money. But you're not going to never make new money if you're scared to lose the money that you got. You got to be willing to do something a little bit different. And you're getting to a point where you're like too comfortable if you have the money to do so. And then for other people, what holds them back, I believe, is the fact that they think they need money. When I was listening to a podcast, I don't know who said it, but they said, like, people say that you need money to make money and said that that's BS. You need courage to make money. And so you have to get over that, the fear of thinking you don't need money. You have to go talk to people because there's a million ways to get inside real estate, not just purchasing your first property. You can go and talk to somebody who is purchasing properties at one of those seminars and ask them, can you do some dirty work for them? Can you log some numbers? Can you go drive by a couple properties for them and say you want to do it for free just so you can kind of learn the business? So if you really want to do it, you have to prepare yourself by education, and then you just have to have the courage just to step off the cliff and just try to dive in there and get it done.
I think also sometimes, like, I know people don't think they have the resources. Like they say they want to get into real estate, but things hold them back. Like, oh, I don't have a contractor. I don't have anyone that can, you know, I don't have any handyman that can buy a foreclosure or buy a fixer upper and fix it. But I mean, there's resources out there. There's definitely people you can find through networking online, where you can find people that will help you renovate your home. So it's definitely doable. And then, you know, we live in the age of technology. Everything's on YouTube. Clearly, absolutely nothing about renovating a house at first. Like, nothing. I don't even think he knew how to even use a hammer. I know he knew how to use a hammer. But, like, you know, anyway, but now he can, like, install windows. He can install floors. He knows how to, you know, do a little plumbing, a little electrician stuff here and there. So you learn. There's YouTube. There's Google. You learn, you know, as you go or whatever. So to say that, you know, you're scared because you never did it before, you don't have contractors, you can definitely learn because he's done it. I even, you know, I've become more handy being a part of this. So it's definitely doable.
Definitely. Definitely. And I have a couple off-topic questions. So I was looking on the Instagram and there was a post just talking about, I think it was taking out algebra and including like finance and just different finance, personal finance courses in high school instead. In your opinion, why do you think that schools don't teach kids in high school about like finances, investing, ownership, and that kind of thing?
Oh, we talk about this all the time. They don't teach you it because they don't want us. They don't want us to be successful. They don't want us to have money. They don't want us. They just don't want it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's easier. You know, they always say you don't know anything if you don't read or whatever. And same thing goes for school. The reason why they don't teach it to us is because they don't want us to know. Teaching you, you know, frivolous things like algebra. I still don't really understand how algebra helps you in the world. It does in some cases, but, you know, personal financing, accounting, those are more tangible things like understanding credit, understanding wealth building, understanding how much the dollar is worth. Those are things, especially in poor Black communities, like Hispanic communities, those are things that I believe that have to be taught. So, like, even now with our five-year-old son, like, we're teaching him what a liability is. We're teaching him what an asset is. Those are things I know me and Khalil, and we didn't even necessarily care or know about those things until college, you know what I mean? So kind of just teaching him ourselves, you know, at 5 years old, this is how much a dollar is worth, and this is what an asset is. It's something that makes you money. A liability is something that, you know, takes your money. Like, little things like that, they just don't want you to know because they don't want you to build wealth, I think. What do you think, Khalil?
I think they're just, like, I guess, perpetuating like the idea of the American dream that you work hard and you'll be able to get anything that you want to get. And even growing up, like, what is the thing your parents say? Go to school, get a good education so you can do what? So you can go to college, so you can do what at the college, so you can get a good job.
Right.
But they're not teaching us to be actual like entrepreneurs. Like, if you want to be rich, unless you're like in a discipline, like being a doctor, maybe even a lawyer, or not rich to be wealthy, most likely you have to learn about finance and you have to learn about money. And to be real, a lot of the people who are in control of the education system, a lot of them don't know. So I'm sure our teachers don't know about creating wealth, like, or whatever. They kind of, it's something that's misinterpreted that we don't understand. But I believe, like I tell Cass all the time, like, for us to know what we know now, we'll be fools to give our children to the education system and expect them to make our children to the men that we want our kids to be. Like, it's up to us to be able to educate them. Right. And so our whole goal and plan now is anybody we can get around, we want to teach them about credit. We want to teach them about real estate. We want to bring people along so they can see the things that we're doing. And we're not at the level where we're like killing it yet. We feel like we're still at the bottom, but we understand how to get to where we want to get to. And as long as we stay on that path and we continue to bring people along with us, I think we'll be able to reach our goals in a short matter.
Yeah, and don't get us wrong. Education is important. It's actually very important. It can open definitely a lot of doors. But I don't know. I know, you know, you grew up being Haitian. I grew up being Haitian. Like, mm-hmm. You know, education is the number one thing. I never thought that I could be an entrepreneur, really. Like, you know, I didn't think it was something that I could turn to something. My mom wanted me to go to college. She wanted me to go to school. And that's fine. That's dandy. But, you know, it's also up to parents to teach their kids things that they're not learning in school, like finances, like, you know, learning how to, if you have a dollar, how to make that dollar turn into $10, so on and so forth. So the American education system is definitely lacking in some places, and I don't even want to make it like a public school versus private school thing. Cause, you know, I went to private school. I went to private school from kindergarten to eighth grade. And basically they're all, you know, teaching you the same thing. Unless you're specifically interested in finance and you're taking a finance course in high school, a lot of things get skipped over our minds. And I know, like, we look around, like, some of Khalil's friends, you know, in high school, and some of my friends that are, you know, still in high school, you know, a lot of people are still struggling. A lot of people don't understand their finances. They don't know how to, you know, save a penny or make a penny. So, you know, we kind of just graduate high school or graduate college and just go off into the world. And like he said, like, America does a great job on selling you the American dream. Go to college, rack up $100,000 worth of debt, have to pay it back. You know, drilling you that you're not making it if you don't drive a nice car, you're not making it if you don't have a nice house, and then that kind of keeps you down, sort of, like, you know what I mean, like, it kind of keeps you under what's his name, the Uncle Sam's finger, basically. Like,
absolutely. And tell me more about how you mentioned a bit about your son. Tell me more about how you're kind of trying to teach him and how involved he is and just getting exposure and learning about everything you all are doing.
Yeah, so we take him, any chance we go to look at a house, we take him there. He's running around holding his nose like, ew, get me out of here, it stinks. Or when the houses are done, we're taking him around with us and he's walking around, he's getting around the guys who are working for us. And so, and we tell him like every day, like, hey, this is your house. Like, and we let him know. So every time he sees it, he's like, oh, we got another house. This is my house. And when he prays at night, he says, Lord, thank you for all of my houses. Thank you for everything you're blessing me today, what you're going to bless me with inside the future. Right. And I think it's him seeing that is like something that's going to like resonate in him when he gets older. Because just like we mentioned earlier, I never even thought about buying a house or purchasing a house until I was like, I'm 28 now, until I was like 22 years old, maybe 23. Like, I never thought about it. I never thought about a credit card. I never thought about like a whole lot of things. And it wasn't like because I went to college. Like I was a pretty decently smart like human being, but a lot of that stuff I didn't see growing up. I didn't see us owning a house. I only seen was a landlord. And when I seen the landlord come and knock on the door for money, I said, oh, this landlord is the worst guy ever. But now I'm older and I'm in real estate and I'm realizing, dang, the landlord's only probably making $300. He's not making that whole $1,100 my mom is paying him. Like, my perspective is like totally changed on like the world and how everything is. So I think him being around and seeing the business grow, seeing the houses and us continue to explain to him like this is his, and when he gets older, it's going to be his and his brother's. I think it's going to like set him up it's going to set him up on a higher stairs, like when it's time for him, when he gets older.
Right.
Absolutely. I think that's awesome. I was reading somewhere, I don't know whose Instagram it was, but they basically said, you can't pass your job down to your kid, but you can pass down assets. You can pass down cash flow. And yeah. I mean, look at where it is now. Imagine when he's 18, it's probably going to be yeah. 300, 400, 500 properties, you know, yeah. that y'all have by that time.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Absolutely. So Khalil, I didn't mean to cut you off.
What yeah, you nah, so I said then college is going to be like a, it's going to be a choice of experience and not oh, yeah. be a, say that's what you want to go do for your job. If we can educate him before he gets to school, mm-hmm. The pressure will be completely off for him if he's like, understands, he doesn't grow up inside a struggle and understands how to make money himself without having like a buy it by the system. And it's going to allow his childhood to be better and his like going into his adulthood without the pressure of trying to make money. And that's what the plan that we want to have for him is.
Right.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Khalil, I have to ask you, as a NFL guy, what do you think of the Jay-Z deal? I had to ask.
I was completely all over the place with it because I wasn't playing at the time when Kaepernick started taking the stand or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm 100% forward and with them on it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like how the narrative continued to be changed about what he was actually taking a knee for. Like, he was taking a knee for oppression, police brutality, and everything like that. And they just changed it over to now got people running around Blue Lives Matter and stuff like that. Like, they matter too, but that's not what the stance is. We're talking about a problem that's been going inside America for forever because of slavery. And a lot of people try to, like, throw that under the bus. And, like, I remember, like, talking to a couple of my friends that's still playing. Like, I was asking, like, are y'all going to hold hands? Are y'all going to go out there and hold hands with your teammates, or you're going to take a knee. I said, don't let them change the message into a unity message. Like, the message was not about unity and bringing everybody together. It was about uncovering the ugly face that America has for Black people inside of this country. And so when Jay-Z signed whatever deal that he signed over like that, I was kind of upset when I was thinking about it. And I was like, what the heck? For the only reason that the news come up that Kaepernick had nothing to do with it or Kaepernick wasn't informed about it. And I felt like, at the time, he was talking Kaepernick and getting everybody like of color like on his side. But when it came time to strike a deal, he went behind his back and he went and did something that like that's going to catapult him somewhere inside the future. Now, me just looking at the surface, I don't know if eventually he's going to try to make change and stuff like that. But it's hard. How could you make change and be a part of a movement when the person who started the movement, they completely kicked him out of the league? They took his face off of everything. If you're not supporting him while you're trying to do the movement, then I think it's kind of fake to me.
Yeah,
it's tough. Yeah. I'm interested to see how everything plays out.
Me too. I don't want to cast judgment too early.
Yeah.
But you never know. But on the surface, everything like that, I think it's kind of wrong that Kaepernick wouldn't be involved inside of anything that's going on as far as bringing communities together and dealing with oppression and all of the programs that the NFL now is implementing. And they're only implementing him because of the stand that he took. And it's just sad that he had to pay the price for not playing for it no more.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I heard someone say that he should have said something along the lines of, I'm not doing anything with y'all unless y'all include him, unless he's at the table, unless he has a part in it, which I agree with. So, I mean, it looks weird, you know, but
yeah.
I mean, I guess we'll see.
Bringing this whole conversation into the light, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it would only be right that he's included in anything that has to do with, you know, the Black community, Black people, our culture, our music, anything that has to do with the Jay-Z deal. So, I mean, you know, aside from all this real estate talk, me and Khalil, like, I would like to say we're very pro-Black. So, like, anything.
I love that, it.
Right.
Right on.
For the advancement of our community. Mm-hmm. Another thing, like, you know, to bring it back a little bit into real estate, another thing that we were seeing happening in a lot of communities around the way, like where I'm from Asbury Park, New Jersey, and also where Khalil's from, Camden County, probably where you're from in Brooklyn, there's a lot of gentrification. There are a lot of white people and Jewish people coming into our communities, buying up the houses for dirt poor, and then raising the rent, you know, and then our people can't afford it. So on top of us wanting to, you know, attain financial freedom through real estate, we also thought about the community. We also thought, like, why are we letting these white people come in into our communities they don't live here. So they're, you know, we're letting them control our community by who they're putting into these homes, and we can have the power to do it as well. So that was also very important to us. Like, you know, we wanna be a part of shaping the way our communities look. We're tired of letting, you know, white people come in and, you know, they're putting, you know, their wealth building off of us, off of our backs. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a continuum from slavery till now, 2019, we're still letting, you know, them win, sort of thing. So that was important to us too with this real estate.
No, definitely. Sure. I agree 1,000%.
Yeah.
And are there any books or podcasts that you recommend, or different resources that people should look into who are trying to get into real estate and just educate themselves?
Yeah. Well, the number one book, I'm sure that everybody says, is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Like, it's an easy read. We both read the book. I think it like set us like on our path of like learning to invest and have your assets create more assets and not like feed your liabilities. And after Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I think one of my favorite books is The Richest Man in Babylon. It's like a, I don't know if you heard about it or not. It's like a book like set like way back many centuries ago, and it's like a whole bunch of parables and stuff like that about purchasing insurance and buying real estate and paying back your debts. And it really like set the groundwork of investing down for me. And I think it's a real good book to read. It's like kind of fictional, so it's not something that's dry. You'll read like, whoa, yeah, this happened, that happened. So it's pretty cool.
Right. And for me, there's a guy, you probably know of him, his name is Grant Cardone. He's like super into the real estate. He has a book. It's a you know, very small book or whatever. It's a couple pages, but it's called The Millionaire Booklet. So that book like helped me like. And also, there's another book. What's it called? The Power of Now.
Yeah, The Power of Now.
Like that's also good. That's also good.
It's a lot of different books. We read like the One Thing, I think, by Gary Keller or something like that. It's a lot of good reads out there that you can find like aside the real estate realm.
And then for podcasts, we listen to Bigger Pockets. Yeah, listen all to the time.
Bigger Pockets all the time.
It's good stuff.
I'm sure Bigger Pockets, like a lot of also like The Ultimate Guide to Real Estate Investing. I think it's one of the first books they put out. Like, it's a beginner's guide to purchasing a property. That's another book that we read. And all of the podcasts are just so like informational on what you want to do, and just seeing how like everybody's real estate journey, from a person that has one house to a person that has 2 million, and it's kind of crazy just listening to those podcasts and stuff like that. If you're just starting out, I advise you to visit Bigger Pockets, and then before that, visit your podcast. I know you're gonna have a lot of great information on there about real estate.
Absolutely. That's the goal. That's the goal. Yeah. And where can people find you who want to connect with you, either virtually or perhaps they're in the tri-state area and they just want to connect and learn more about everything y'all are doing?
Glaud Property on Instagram, GLAUD Property. We constantly respond to back to people on in DMs. We try to like as many posts and stuff like that as possible. So we're very active on there. So if anybody wants to talk to us, even to meet with us, just hit us up on there and we'll try to find some time to talk to you or even see you in person.
Right.
Definitely. Do you all attend any local meetups or anything with other real estate investors?
Not formally. We haven't yet. Like, we have like a group of people that invest inside of the area, like a good like 7 to 8 guys.
Nice.
We may get up and probably go out to eat or go to like go golfing and stuff like that to connect with them. But formally, we haven't really been to like a big real estate meetup. But however, like, she was just talking to me a couple of days ago saying that's something that we really have to do. Yeah. And so when's the next one?
The next one sometime in October, I think. Yeah. October 14th.
So whenever that is, we're definitely going to go there. And we have to just start, want to build our brand and scale up. So we have to network and find people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wow, it's been a pleasure talking to y'all. I'm on fire. I'm on fire. I mean, it's just amazing to see how far y'all have come in 3 years and where y'all are going in the future. It's very inspiring just to know specifically kind of the route you took, just the first deal and kind of progressing through the other ones. So I definitely appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners will appreciate it. Definitely see the power of having a significant other who you align with and kind of balance each other out. And it's just great to see you two doing such amazing things. And I can't wait to see what you all do in the future.
Yeah. We'd love to get on the show.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we can definitely have an update at some point. We'd love to have y'all on again. Really definitely appreciate it. It sounds like the baby's sleeping.
Yeah, he is.
That's another win.
Yeah.
Definitely. But I definitely appreciate you two coming on. I'll pause the recording and we could just talk for like a moment. Thank you so much for tuning into the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. Look forward to connecting with you all soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.